Chapter 2. The Veil Suddenly Falls. Two words first. A month ago, I noticed a strange melancholy in her. Not simply silence, but melancholy. That, too, I noticed suddenly. She was sitting at her work, her head bent over her sewing, and she did not see that I was looking at her. And it suddenly struck me that she had grown so delicate-looking, so thin, that her face was pale, her lips were white. All this, together with her melancholy, struck me at once. I had already heard a little dry cough, especially at night. I got up at once and went off to ask Schrader to come, saying nothing to her. Schrader came next day. She was very much surprised, and looked first at Schrader, and then at me. "But I am well," she said, with an uncertain smile. Schrader did not examine her very carefully. These doctors are sometimes superciliously careless. He only said to me in the other room that it was just the result of her illness, and that it wouldn't be amiss to go for a trip to the sea in the spring, or, if that were impossible, to take a cottage out of town for the summer. In fact, he said nothing except there was a weakness or something of that sort. When Schrader had gone, she said again, looking at me very earnestly, "I am quite well, quite well." But as she said this, she suddenly flushed, apparently from shame. Apparently it was shame. Oh, now I understand. She was ashamed that I was still her husband, that I was looking after her still, as though I were a real husband. But at the time I did not understand, and put down her blush to humility, the veil. And so, a month later, in April, at 5 o'clock on a bright sunny day, I was sitting in the shop, making up my accounts. Suddenly I heard her, sitting in our room, at work, at her table, begin softly, softly, singing. This novelty made an overwhelming impression upon me, and to this day I don't understand it. Till then I had hardly ever heard her sing, unless perhaps in those first days, when we were still able to be playful and practice shooting at a target. Then her voice was rather strong, resonant, though not quite true, it was very sweet and healthy. Now her little song was so faint. It was not that it was melancholy, it was some sort of ballad, but in her voice there was something jangled, broken, as though her voice were not equal to it, as though the song itself was sick. She sang in an undertone. And suddenly, as her voice rose, it broke. Such a poor little voice. It broke so pitifully. She cleared her throat, and again began softly, softly singing. My emotions will be ridiculed, but no one will understand why I was so moved. No, I was still not sorry for her. It was still something quite different. At the beginning, for the first minute at any rate, I was filled with sudden perplexity and terrible amazement. A terrible and strange, painful and almost vindictive amazement. She is singing, and before me. Has she forgotten about me? Completely overwhelmed, I remained where I was. Then I suddenly got up, took my hat and went out, as it were, without thinking. At least, I don't know why or where I was going. Lucaria began giving me my overcoat. "She is singing," I said to Lucaria involuntarily. She did not understand and looked at me still without understanding, and indeed I really was unintelligible. "Is it the first time she is singing?" "No. She sometimes does sing when you are out," answered Lucaria. I remember everything. I went downstairs, went out into the street and walked along at random. I walked to the corner and began looking into the distance. People were passing by. They pushed against me. I did not feel it. I called a cab and told the man, I don't know why, to drive to Polizeski Bridge, then suddenly changed my mind and gave him 20 kopecks. "That's for my having troubled you," I said with a meaningless laugh, but a sort of ecstasy was suddenly shining within me. I returned home, quickening my steps. The poor little jangled, broken note was ringing in my heart again. My breath failed me. The veil was falling from my eyes. Since she sang before me, she had forgotten me. That is what was clear and terrible. My heart felt it, but rapture was glowing in my soul, and it overcame my terror. Oh, the irony of fate! Why, there had been nothing else, and could have been nothing else, but that rapture in my soul all the winter. But where had I been myself all the winter? Had I been there together with my soul? I ran up the stairs in great haste. I don't know whether I went in timidly. I only remember that the whole floor seemed to be rocking, as I felt as though I were floating on a river. I went into the room. She was sitting in the same place as before, with her head cursorily and without interest at me. It was hardly a look, but just a habitual and indifferent movement upon somebody's coming into the room. I went straight up and sat down beside her in a chair abruptly, as though I were mad. She looked at me quickly, seeming frightened. I took her hand, and I don't remember what I said to her, that is, tried to say, for I could not even speak properly. My voice broke and would not obey me, and I did not know what to say. I could only gasp for breath. "Let us talk, you know. Tell me something," I muttered something stupid. Oh, how could I help being stupid? She started again and drew back in great alarm, looking at my face. But suddenly there was an expression of stern surprise in her eyes. Yes, surprise and stern. She looked at me with wide-open eyes. That sternness, that stern surprise shattered me at once. "So you still expect love? Love?" that surprise seemed to be asking, though she said nothing. But I read it all. I read it all. Everything within me seemed quivering, and I simply fell down at her feet. Yes, I grovelled at her feet. She jumped up quickly, but I held her forcibly by both hands, and I fully understood my despair. I understood it, but would you believe it? Ecstasy was surging up in my head so violently that I thought I should die. I kissed her feet in delirium and rapture. Yes, in immense, infinite rapture, and that in spite of understanding all the hopelessness of my despair. I wept, said something, but could not speak. Her alarm and amazement were followed by some uneasy misgiving, some grave question, and she looked at me strangely, wildly even. She wanted to understand something quickly, and she smiled. She was horribly ashamed at my kissing her feet, and she drew them back, but I kissed the place on the floor where her foot had rested. She saw it, and suddenly began laughing with shame. You know how it is when people laugh with shame. She became hysterical. I saw that her hands trembled. I did not think about that, but went on muttering that I loved her, that I would not get up. "Let me kiss your dress, and worship you like this all my life." I don't know. I don't remember. But suddenly she broke into sobs and trembled all over. A terrible fit of hysterics followed. I had frightened her. I carried her to the bed. When the attack had passed off, sitting on the edge of the bed with a terribly exhausted look, she took my two hands and begged me to calm myself. "Come, come, don't distress yourself. Be calm." And she began crying again. All that evening I did not leave her side. I kept telling her I should take her to Boulogne to bathe in the sea, now, at once, in a fortnight, that she had such a broken voice, I had heard it that afternoon, that I would shut up the shop, that I would sell it to Bronrovov, that everything should begin again afresh, and, above all, Boulogne, Boulogne. She listened, and was still afraid. She grew more and more afraid, but that was not what mattered most for me. What mattered most to me was the more and more irresistible longing to fall at her feet again and again, to kiss and kiss the spot where her foot had rested, and to worship her. "And I ask nothing, nothing more of you," I kept repeating. "Do not answer me. Take no notice of me. Only let me watch you from my corner. Treat me as your dog, your thing." She was crying. "I thought you would let me go on like that," suddenly broke from her unconsciously, so unconsciously that perhaps she did not notice what she had said, and yet, oh, that was the most significant, momentous phrase she uttered that evening, the easiest for me to understand, and it stabbed my heart as though with a knife. It explained everything to me, everything, but while she was beside me, before my eyes, I could not help hoping and was fearfully happy. Oh, I exhausted her fearfully that evening. I understood that, but I kept thinking that I should alter everything directly. At last, towards night, she utterly exhausted. I persuaded her to go to sleep, and she fell sound asleep at once. I expected her to be delirious. She was a little delirious, but very slightly. I kept getting up every minute in the night and going softly in my slippers to look at her. I wrung my hands over her, looking at that frail creature in that wretched little iron bedstead which I had bought for 3 rubles. I knelt down, but did not dare to kiss her feet in her sleep without her consent. I began praying, but leapt up again. Lukerya kept watch over me, and came in and out from the kitchen. I went in to her, and told her to go to bed, and that tomorrow things would be quite different. And I believed in this, blindly, madly. Oh, I was brimming over with rapture, rapture! I was eager for the next day. Above all, I did not believe that anything could go wrong, in spite of the symptoms. Reason had not altogether come back to me, though the veil had fallen from my eyes, and for a long, long time it did not come back. Not till today. Not till this very day. Yes, and how could it have come back then? Why, she was still alive then. Why, she was still here before my eyes, and I was before her eyes. Tomorrow she will wake up, and I will tell her all this, and she will see it all. That was how I reasoned then, simply and clearly, because I was in an ecstasy. My great idea was the trip to Boulogne. I kept thinking, for some reason, that Boulogne would be everything, that there was something final and decisive about Boulogne. To Boulogne, to Boulogne. I waited frantically for the morning.